This is Raul Lopez, and you're listening to How Do You Say Success in Spanglish? The path to success isn't easy. For minorities and people of color, many attempt this journey with little to no guidance. Join me as I sit down with individuals who share their stories of perseverance so that together we can learn how to say success in Spanglish. What's good, mi gente? It's your boy, Raul. Welcome back. Thanks for coming to the show today. I have a very special guest, Liz Gallo. How's it going, Liz? Welcome to the show.
How's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you. For people who are listening, Liz was one of graciously hit me up after, I think, listening to one of my episodes to talk. And, you know, we decided it'd be great to have her on the show. So she has a great story to tell. So I'm really excited for you being here. So just to kind of give a little background on Liz, Liz Gallo is a licensed marriage and family therapist with 8 years of experience in the mental health field. She specializes in those struggling with chronic illnesses and has provided services within the community mental health and private practice settings. Throughout her career, she has worked with adolescents, adults, as well as couples. She supports her clients with various concerns, including anxiety, depression, grief, low self-esteem, and various forms of trauma. She values transparency, quality of care, and continuous growth. Her hope is to aid her clients in developing healthier relationships and increase self-esteem and authenticity. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Thanks for having me again. Like, I appreciate any opportunity I can get to kind of share my story. So,
no, like I said, when you hit me up and you started talking to me, and I was like, oh my God, yeah, I would love to have you on the show. I think there's a lot of, you know, I think everybody's journey has lessons learned that we can all learn from, and I'm glad you're willing to share it. So, with that being said, let's start off. You know, tell me, who is Liz Gallo?
That's such an interesting question. I feel like you covered such a big aspect of my identity, which is being a therapist. But outside of that, like it's honestly really hard to kind of answer that question, right? Like, who are we? But I guess in a sense, some of the other roles that I am in is I'm a friend, I'm a sister, I'm a daughter, you know? And in a sense, like when I talk about being a therapist, like I always try to describe that, like the characteristics of what it takes to be a therapist, like I feel like I've always embodied them. And it's what led me to become a therapist. Like making this world a better place has always been something that has motivated me, even when life has gotten hard. It's been one of my most impactful, like motivating factors.
Nice. And so you talk about, you know, when life has been hard. So I think one of the things that you mentioned to me is that you were born with cerebral palsy. And you're also from California growing up. You know, what was life growing up with cerebral palsy?
It was not fun, I'll tell you that. So one aspect to really talk about is whether it was my immediate family or just like extended friends and just other family members. Like I didn't see anybody else in my circles that had anything similar to it. So in that sense, it felt kind of lonely, and nobody to really like connect with to understand what it was like. There was a lot of teasing that went on. So like my siblings would have to kind of like step in and stand up for me because I wasn't really the type to stand up for myself. Mm-hmm. It's never been easy for me to do that. But yeah, just kind of feeling othered a lot of the time. Like, again, like the way that I describe it, and it's in this show called Special on Netflix. Mm-hmm. This guy talks about how, because he's the actor in the show, but he has cerebral palsy as well. So he's speaking from his own experience of like, you're not able-bodied enough or normal enough to fit in with the able-bodied community, but you're also not impacted by your disability significantly, so you don't fit in with, you know, those within the disabled community. Because with cerebral palsy, it's like a spectrum. It's almost like how you look at autism. Like people land on more severe sides or less severe sides. Mine is not severe at all. The biggest thing is I walk with a limp because it affects the right side of my body, but it's not as severe, as I'm saying, as like other cases can be, like because some people with CP, but the CP is short for cerebral palsy, are in wheelchairs or use some sort of assisted, maybe a cane or just other devices like that. So it's like, I've always felt like, where do I fit in? Because sometimes even trying to fit in with those that are quote unquote normal, which I don't really like that word. I wouldn't, you know?
Yeah. So I think for a lot of people, especially like Latinos and you're Mexican, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
Guadalajara, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I think for a lot of us, we tend to have that struggle just from like identity as far as a Latino in America. And then you're adding an additional layer to that as well as having someone with disability.
You know what? I never had that as far as like being Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't feel like I struggled in that regard. I think more so the struggle in that area was like the differing values between me and, like, for example, my dad.
Mm-hmm.
But like, as far as fitting, I guess maybe it's because I don't even, my complexion doesn't really, you know, show that I'm Hispanic.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like that could be part of it, but I never felt like I didn't fit in. Like the culture has always been just something naturally that's a part of me and that I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But I never had to experience that struggle of where do I belong there. It was more so, I think, with my disability was more present.
No, okay, nice. And so as far as your disability goes, like, did people ever have, like, different expectations of you because of your disability? You know,
I think there were some accommodations made, I think, you know. Physically, like, I couldn't do certain things. There's still certain things that I can't do. So even in like PE class, they would always just like, for example, if the kids had to run a mile, by the time I walked, so they would run 4 laps, but by the time I walked 2, they were done with running their 4th lap.
Mm-hmm.
I always validate that, like, even in a situation like mine, there's certain privileges, mm-hmm. right? Like teachers would give me a pass.
Mm-hmm.
But as a student academically, I always struggled. I can't really tell you if that was, connected to like me having CP, but like CP is physical 100%. It doesn't always, it can affect intellect,
mm-hmm.
but I can't really tell you that it affected mine, but just, I wasn't the best student growing up. So I think there was like accommodations and or adjustments and expectations there because mm-hmm. I struggled. But I can't really confirm that it was because I had CP. I think it was just like, I just wasn't demonstrating to be like a top-notch student back then. I was very distracted.
Very distracted. I was horrible early on. I stayed back in first grade. I was such a troublemaker. Like
my teachers would let my mom know that I would kind of daydream and stuff, but yep. I just wouldn't grasp things. To be honest, like, I kind of was not great at school, probably up until I got to learning about my profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's what I actually love to learn. Everything else was hard.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's what it takes. Sometimes it's when mm-hmm. you start learning about something you love where you actually care about it is where it matters. Otherwise, you know, you're just kind of like, whatever.
Even now, that's probably the only thing that I really like like really, I guess, in a sense, smart about. Like if you ask me like other random general knowledge, like I'm like, I don't know. But if you ask me like, you know, counseling theories, I can talk about it at the drop of a hat. So.
I mean, that's what you want from your therapist, right? I don't care if you give pop culture references or know the history of Europe, as long as you know how to help out with being a therapist. So I'm glad to hear it. Well, I mean, it is your passion. So what drove you into being that passion?
So the origin story of that is I was in the 8th grade and they had career day and the principal, her sister came. So the principal's sister was a social worker and she spoke about her job as a social worker and it just sparked something. Like I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. I had never heard anything about helping professions, I think, before that point. And ever since then, I had told myself I want to be a social worker. And that didn't change. I was pretty solid. Like, nobody could change my mind. I was like, I'm going to be a social worker. I'm going to help kids in DCFS, which is Department of Children and Family Services. But I took a class in undergrad that was like group therapy. And I got exposed to counseling theories and we actually got to like implement them and see them be used. So I switched to therapy at that point.
Nice. And is that when you started getting better at school as well? Like once you figured out, hey, this is what I like. I knew I needed to get better in school to get to college to do this.
I think that's what it was, because it really sparked something. Because part of it is like, hopefully I don't get too technical with this, but like when you start learning about counseling theories, what a counseling theory is each one has its own description of what causes problems to arise for people and ultimately how to help the person work through it. So it's like a different angle with each one.
Okay.
And I remember learning about Adlerian theory, which is from Alfred Adler. And I just was like, I saw myself in some of what he was talking about. So it felt almost validating. So like, I must not be the only one, and just a sense of insight for me.
Mm-hmm.
And learning about myself has always been fun. Like I like to make those connections. Like the why of why I do the things that I do, trying to understand those around me. So it really offered that to me. And I think that's what made it exciting.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And during that time, I also just did a lot of personal work with that group class. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of processing and healing happening. So that's kind of what I think also drew me to therapy. It just felt more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And I like intimacy versus social work. A lot of times social workers can look at the bigger picture,
mm-hmm.
like more organizations or just bigger groups. But I like the aspect of it being one-on-one.
So it was kind of like a self-feeding machine where you were learning, using what you've learned to improve yourself and making you want to learn more and improve other people's life kind of deal?
Yeah. Like it was serving both of those angles.
Nice, nice. And do you think that with everything that you've dealt with your disability has allowed you to become more available, like with other people, like being able to help them out better?
Yeah, I think so. I think in a sense it elevated my sense of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was just so many different things going on that were difficult and scary that it helps me. Like what I always describe to my clients in a sense is like our experiences are going to be different, maybe even slightly similar. But regardless of the difference, what is going to always be the same is the emotions that we experience.
Mm-hmm.
So because I had such immense experience causing these emotions early on, like it just led to a deep understanding of like what that feels like,
mm-hmm.
and like what you most need during those moments of struggle, which is just somebody to sit with you, to validate you. Like that is so impactful. So because I had a desire and a need for those things, when people are in a place of struggle, that's all I want to provide them, was what I needed.
And when you were dealing with all your stuff, was validation something that you were missing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To some degree, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard. Like I always say that like holding space for people, even with all the skills and where I'm at now, like it's uncomfortable when you see someone in such immense pain.
Yeah.
Because as a therapist, like you're going to hear some pretty rough stories, and like you think you're prepared, but you'll just like hear a story all of a sudden, and it's hard because even when it happens for me all the time, even now, like I sometimes, when there's a struggle, I go into fixing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's how I know I'm feeling uncomfortable. And it's a point of me catching myself of like, no, like that may not be what the person needs. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes they have to tell me like, I don't need that. But I think it's really easy as a human being to go into fixing.
And I know for probably it's something therapists need to learn is stopping yourself from wanting to fix. Cause I think for a lot of us, we listen to stuff and our first instincts is like you said, oh, well, stop doing that or do it this way or doing that. And that's not what they want. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. But I think, you know, again, like I think it's understandable. Like obviously we have a job where we need to be more mindful of it.
Mm-hmm.
But even if I do, I'm just compassionate towards myself because it's hard. Like this work is hard. Life is hard. I always say like, because life is so hard, we don't like also need to be like in a funny way, like assholes to ourselves about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's okay to be compassionate. Like, I didn't do it intentionally. And when I do that, go into fixing, like, I'll check in with the client. I acknowledge it. I apologize, you know, and I do all of those necessary things. But again, we're flawed human beings, so we're not always going to get it right. And that's okay.
And you mentioned in our pre-interview that when we talked beforehand, that one of the challenges you dealt with while you were growing up was barriers. Can you elaborate mm-hmm. on that?
Well, it wasn't even just in like childhood, but I think just my whole general experience mm-hmm. with having a disability. Again, it's like the misconceptions that people can have of you. Like I don't really know sometimes what people think, but there was like teasing that would happen. So like, again, like I wouldn't feel like that connection with people. And it sort of led to a decrease in my self-esteem, which ultimately in the long run, I think really affected the trajectory of how things played out for me. Like I think in fact, my lack of self-esteem is what like led to me taking quote unquote longer to get to where I am. Because I always tell people like I'm late to the game. Mm-hmm. I got my license as a therapist probably 10 years late mm-hmm. compared to most people. Most people are like 25. I was like 36 when I got my license. Okay. But like, I think I didn't have the confidence to really go for things. I would talk myself out of it. And just that feeling of not being good enough. And then even as I got older and I tried to get jobs, there was like discrimination. And it was mental health related jobs, but I just could not get in the door. So I was stuck working at Walmart for quite some time. I spent like 10 years there mm-hmm. and I felt like I was never going to get out. So like, just like in a sense, lack of opportunity. But fortunate for me, I found this field where like my physical limitations are not really relevant. Like I still kick ass, even though nice. It's not a physical job. It's more, you know, mental. Mm-hmm. And I'm really grateful for that because I don't have to worry about that, like getting in the way. It actually serves me. Like it's a point of like that's an asset in this field. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice. It's really empowering to have it feel that way versus like, it's going to be something that gets you like off the list mm-hmm. of having a chance. But yeah, I would say like just the discrimination and the teasing are two big ones for me.
And when you would get teased and things like that, so you said, you mentioned you had your siblings help out.
Yeah. So I'm a twin.
Okay.
Oh, my twin brother and my older sister. They were pretty good at stepping in.
Nice.
And it's not something that I would really like ask for. It was just kind of like that was their response. But it, like I said, I wouldn't like it when it would happen, but I think again there was just that lack of confidence to actually speak up to what I was feeling about it. So I never would. Even I think now when people like I try to push myself to now, mm-hmm. but I can't say that it's easy even for me now.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. and when your family helped out and your things like that, did that kind of help give you some of that validation that you say you were not feeling all the time? Like, did you feel validated when they defended you?
I mean, it felt nice to have somebody like stand up for me, mm-hmm. of course. Yeah. But I think part of me back then would feel bad because I couldn't do it. Like there was this sense of like, again, not that they would say it, this is how I'm kind of interpreting it mm-hmm. When I was younger, of like, man, they have to do it because I can't. So kind of like feeling negatively towards myself about it.
Okay. And I know you talked about your self-esteem being a barrier. Mm-hmm. And I think you touched, you know, it's a good point you brought up where it's like you deal with kind of like the confidence to even like reach out for a new job. And you get stuck in the thing. Mm-hmm. And so you talked about working at Walmart. Like, what helped motivate you to get, like, improve on that and work on your self-esteem when you were in those slumps?
Wanting to help people.
Yeah.
It was always that. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always conveyed that even in the darkest of times, like in the face of like whatever adversity it was, that would just always come back to the front of my mind of like, I want to do that. And even when I was working at Walmart, I would tell people like, I'm going to be a therapist. I didn't know fucking how I was going to do it. Cause like, I didn't really know. And I didn't really know anybody that was a therapist, but I was like, I'm going to do it. And it was really nice. Cause once I like went through the whole process, like I had a friend that worked with me there and she's like, you did what you said you were going to do. And I did.
Nice. That's mm-hmm. awesome. And so when you went to college, were you still struggling academically in college?
Yeah. So part of my story that I like to not be shy about is there was a couple of classes I had to take more than once. Mm-hmm. There was one I had to do three times, and which was political science. And I think I took statistics twice.
Okay. Yeah.
So essentially to get out of community college, I think it took me 4 years instead of two. And then I spent another 4 years, I think, finishing up the rest. So in total, I spent 8 years to get my bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I took political science in statistics.
It was a lot of memorizing in that political science class.
Yeah. I mean, I started chemistry pre-med at first. And so that just destroyed my lifestyle completely. But I took statistics thinking it'd be easier than calculus, and I was like destroyed again. I was like, whoa, this is not what I thought it was going to be. So.
But you know what? Like I get a lot of younger clients and I really enjoy it because there's like this pressure to get it right the first time and I can't fail. And I really get to use my story as like a way to normalize mm-hmm. not getting it right away. Mm-hmm. And I always tell them like, it's different if you didn't try. But, you know, maybe you weren't in the right headspace, right? But, like, if you really tried your best with where you are, then that's all we have, right? And, like, again, I know every field is different and some of them do focus on grades. So I don't encourage clients to, like, not give a shit and not get good grades. But, like, if you happen to get one C or one B instead of all A's, right? Like, that's not going to be on your degree.
Mm-hmm.
So like, because people don't understand like the level of pressure with that, like will lead you to mess up more.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
So I'm always trying to find ways to alleviate the pressure.
It's funny the way you put it, because it was kind of an epiphany I had when I got to like my junior year of like college mm-hmm. where I mm-hmm. kind of stopped giving a shit and started doing better. Like I was just like, I'm not going to finish this paper on time. I'm going to hand it in late. And I'd hand it in 3 days late and I'd go from an A- to a B+ as opposed to a D if I would have handed it in on time, you know? And it's like, I kind of was just like, let me take this pressure off. And as I stopped giving a shit, I just kind of started feeling
sorry. We want to not give a shit, but not like, not give a shit 100%. Like,
yeah. You want to give a shit, but I didn't I was going from complete panic attacks and anxiety, you know, my freshman year over every test. And now I'm like, I studied for the night. Whatever I get is what I get, you know? And then I went into the test. I got a good night's sleep and then I get an 80, you know, as opposed to.
You go in clear minded instead of stressed out and overthinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I try to help my younger clients with.
Yeah. And it's true, because I mean, like my freshman year, I would be studying for my exam, and it was, you know, biology, chemistry, all that stuff was a lot of information. You're looking at like 1,000 things, and we're going to test you on 25 things. But I would get like an hour in and then panic for 6 hours and not accomplish anything. You know, and I just spent 6 hours like, I'm going to fail. I'm not going to do this. So, yeah, it's true. I mean, it's, you know, your mental state when you're dealing with these things really make a difference. It's
funny, with school, I was always I don't retain outside of therapy. If it's therapy related, I will retain more. But if it's like a general ed class, like I could cram and do well on an exam, but if I don't care about it, I won't retain it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think
that's what I'm saying, like general information, if you ask me, like, I'm like, I don't, trying to do calculations in my mind, I can't. I'll use my calculator. But like, there's things in undergrad that I learned that I still remember.
I think there's it's a big common issue in college. I know we can probably go on a whole different discussion on like how college works and have like a 3-hour podcast just on that. But, you know, I mean, just in chemistry pre-med, you know, you take an exam and the average was a 45, you know what I mean? And that's the curve to a C. So it's like most people failed and that's the passing grade. So it's like, you know, but yeah, we can go into like a whole different thing with that. Were there any other obstacles in college for you? I know you were taking a while educationally. I mean, academically.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like college was really where. So again, like I did that class, but that class, so you took it a first time, and you just participated. You got to split off into a group of 8 people, and you had like a different group discussion every week. But mm-hmm. then. At the end of the semester, they asked everybody that were taking that class as members, do you want to become a group leader the following semester? And when they asked us that first time, I was like this, like, yeah, no, like, I didn't. And the 2 group leaders that were in my group, like, wrote me a note saying, like, we really think you should, like, you were our, like, all-star member. So, like, just do it. And I was like, fuck it, okay, I'll do it. Like, I was scared, but I did it anyway. And so then you end up like having a group of like 32 leaders that you get to hang out with, because you take classes together. There's just like different components of things that you're doing together. It's how I met my best friend. That's my best friend now. Mm-hmm. But it was people like me. Right, like sensitive, they really valued insight, and they like valued vulnerability. So it was just one of those like, oh shit, like there are other people like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting a tattoo from that class of a lotus flower, and it's red because it stands for love and compassion. And I got the words gratitude and acceptance, because it was such a monumental time in my life where I felt genuine acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And like, again, like I wasn't the only one, because as you know, in Hispanic families, like being sensitive and vulnerable, they're not words that are like taken to in a positive way. Like people are trying to like not be that. Mm-hmm. Like you're not taught to do those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I was, again, I was a rarity in that regard. So it always felt like, man, like what, like, why am I like this? Like, cause again, being the only one, it was just kind of strange. So to come around 32 other people that demonstrated those same qualities, it started to really feel like I'm going to be okay. Like mm-hmm. it's okay to be this way. And like you can find your people, I guess, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And this was during undergrad or grad school?
Yeah, this was undergrad.
And so then you ended up going for grad school. How was that experience? Was it different from what you were dealing with in undergrad?
No, I feel like, again, like there was still like some confidence stuff. I think confidence stuff was kind of there. It's still kind of here now. Like mm-hmm. it's not something that ever fully goes away. I think this is the most confident I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
But no, like things started to really kind of come together by the time I got to grad school, because I had gotten offered a job at a mental health agency. And actually, I should speak to that story. So when I got offered, this was in the middle of grad school.
Mm-hmm.
I got offered the position. But I went to, they send you to go get like a physical or whatnot. And it was at one of those like whatever clinics. And the doctor there, like they ask you about your history, and I have an epilepsy diagnosis. And I disclosed to him that my last one had been in 2010, and this is 2016. And there was some sort of miscommunication. So then he wouldn't approve me. And it turned into a whole thing. It turned into like a 2 month ordeal. But luckily that agency, like, waited it out for me. Like, they wanted to hire me. So they waited. And I got documentation from my neurologist proving that, like, the last one had been in 2010, and ultimately he cleared me. But I guess that's like another sort of thing that like came up as a barrier, right? But it worked out and I got hired. And at that place, confidence really started to come through because they were allowing me to do things task-wise that normally people that had already graduated with their masters were doing. So I was doing like associate level work. Because when you graduate from your master's program, you're considered an associate MFT, which is like in training. But they allowed me, so I got like a head start.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So by the time I got to graduate school, like there were certain assignments that we would do, and like I even had a teacher put up an example of one of the things that we had to do as like the way to do it. It was, we do like case conceptualizations. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm trying not to get too technical, but that process is really complicated because you have to take like the theories that I was talking about and use it to describe a client's case.
Mm-hmm.
And she like literally was like, I have no feedback for yours.
Nice.
And then I did like, we would do group counseling, like role plays. And we had to do one for our group counseling class. And even that teacher was like, I couldn't find anything even if I tried.
Mm-hmm.
So there was just certain skills that I had mastered, maybe not mastered, but mastered more.
Mm-hmm.
That I was like, dang, again, no matter how much evidence I got, like there was still like that imposter syndrome kind of that would linger and be around and creep in.
Yeah. I mean, cause you earlier, you talked about validation, and it seems like you, as you get, you know, I think we all get older and we start becoming more successful in what we do. And we know our shit, you know, we start knowing our shit, you get these validations and they kind of build up and you're kind of like, okay, I know what I'm talking about. And then you get a little more self-esteem, but then there's like that next step and you're kind of like, I don't know if I'm ready. Yeah. Like, I don't know if I'm there yet. I got a job, a year ago, a new job. And, the first few months was kind of slow. They hadn't signed a statement of work yet. I was still waiting to like work for like a couple months. And I'm like, did I do the right thing? Do I even know what I'm talking about? And so like, it was too quiet for me that I got in my head for 2 months that I was like, oh my God, what am I doing here? And now I'm like kicking ass at the job, but it's like,
it's always like that when you start something new. So like my new recent thing is being a professor. And I'll be becoming hopefully a supervisor soon.
Nice.
But like, it's remembering that, right? Like everything has been new at some point. Like when I first became a therapist, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was scared. Like I thought I sucked, you know, like I can't, like, and now I'm at a place where like I can do it more just naturally without overthinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to remember, like, we have to remember that, like a lot of the things that we did were new at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And we overcame.
Mm-hmm.
But that imposter syndrome is going to creep in a lot of times when you're doing something new. Mm-hmm. So that's like my constant battle.
Yeah. And, and it's funny. It's a life lesson I give my daughter all the time too, because she's a big soccer, you know, she's big into soccer. And I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, that's why you practice. You get a little bit better every day because mm-hmm. you don't know it. Then you can't come in knowing everything. You don't know everything. So mm-hmm. it takes time. So it takes practice. But and then as an adult, I don't tell myself that. It's like, I expect myself to know everything. So,
I say that all the time. Like, even as therapists, we're really good at giving suggestions and like prompting clients to do things. And we're not always good about implementing it. But I will say that like my clients do hold me accountable in that way. So like, I talk a lot about being scared and doing the thing anyway. So like, I really try to live in that motto. And that's what pushes me to, I think old Liz would have been like, professor, yeah, right. No, I'm okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I probably would have not gone for it. Found some sort of justification in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm at a place where I'm like, oh, that voice is creeping in, telling you can't do this, you're not good enough. And I'm able to like gain control over it instead of it controlling me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's a hard skill to learn.
Sometimes it's really strong and loud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It doesn't win as often as it used to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, like I said, I feel like your story, like even though different, but I've dealt with a lot of the similar feelings of, okay, mm-hmm. I'm not good enough. I'm not there yet. And mm-hmm. now it's like, okay, I'm telling myself I'm not good enough. Shut up, Raul. You're being an idiot.
Yeah. But honestly, that's coming from like things people have done to us or said to us. It's mm-hmm. not really like what we believe about ourselves
and yeah.
what we know to be true. So, again, otherwise I wouldn't be where I am. Right?
Yeah.
Like if that were really true, would we be where we are?
Mm-hmm.
Likely not.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually enough.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. We made it this far for a reason, right? It wasn't by accident, right? Yeah. So they didn't just drop on our lap. So.
Yeah, we had to work hard for it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's great to hear that, you know, that you're getting better at that. Cause that was one of my questions I was going to ask you. I was like, are you able to handle your self-esteem issues better now than you did before?
Yeah. I think the, at my core, like, the belief is more ingrained that I actually am enough
mm-hmm.
and that I am worthy versus like, I think again, years past, I was believing that I wasn't enough more. Mm-hmm. So like now it's just a belief that creeps in, but like I have a deeper knowing that it's not true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. And do you ever still have any like obstacles that you deal with now when it comes to like your disability with your career now, or is it kind of gone out the pasture now that it's not a big issue anymore?
I mean, career wise, I would say no.
Good.
Again, I really feel like it's an asset to me in this field.
Awesome. Yeah.
I think barriers are more like in the personal realm, probably, but not professional.
Okay. And so you ended up getting a license for what's it called? Mental health and family yeah. therapist, license of marriage and family therapist. Yeah. And so what is that process like?
Oh man. Do you got time? it's very lengthy.
Mm-hmm.
You'll even hear a lot of people, like a lot of people will come up to me, like I thought about doing it, but then I saw everything I had to do and I didn't. No. So it's a master's program, 3,000 hours with no pay or very low pay or lower end pay and a law and ethics exam and a clinical exam. So for me, I did grad school from 2015 to 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we did hours while we were in school, I did about 800 hours. Those are the ones that are not paid while you're in school. Once you graduate, you can apply for jobs. But it took me about, so from, I graduated in June of 2018. And I believe I finished my hours about, like, I think it was 2021. I submitted my application to take the exam in October of 2021. So I finished everything by 2022. So it took me 7 years to do everything.
And did COVID affect anything while you were doing all that stuff?
No, because there's telehealth. So they just sent us home.
Okay.
Nice. And ever since the pandemic, I've been doing all my sessions virtually.
Nice.
So yeah, no, it doesn't affect anything.
Good.
The pandemic actually led to the opposite for the field of therapy
mm-hmm.
versus like other fields. Like they lost like opportunities for employment. Like we were in high demand
yeah.
and we've been in high demand ever since.
Yeah. I was going to say, I mean, I think one of the good things is telehealth got really popular and now people have no excuse to not see the therapist. and they can you don't have to leave the house, go look for your therapist. So
you would think, but like there has been an influx of clients since then.
Good. Nice. Yeah. And you talked about how a lot of the process is unpaid or low pay. So yeah. What is the, like, there's gotta be a huge financial burden, like trying to balance working all these credit cards and like pay your rent and have to work another job. Did you have to do multiple jobs?
That's the thing. I was very fortunate. I lived with my aunt at the time, and she was like probably beyond kind to me, more than, you know, is typical for somebody at that age. Because I was what? So I was in my 30s. But I was working. I was working full time up until and doing grad school up until I started to do my hours. So we did hours the last 9 months of the program. So unfortunately, that great job that I talked to you about, where they waited 2 months for me, it didn't end well. They put me in a position of either choosing them or choosing my practicum, which is where we do our hours. They didn't want to be flexible with me needing to step out because we have to get supervision. And they just decided they didn't want to be flexible with me and told me at the last minute rather than months before when I first told them. So I was forced to leave that job and work part-time for the same company at a different location, but it was only like 20 hours. So I didn't have a lot of income coming in, but like I said, my aunt wasn't really charging me a whole lot. And if anything, I didn't start contributing until I think I got paid employment after I graduated. But while I was in school, I had that support, and even just in general, beyond my aunt, like my parents have always been really supportive. So like, even while you're like working before you're licensed, again, you're still not making a lot. So like, for example, when I like applied to take my licensing exam, it was like $500. There's just a lot of different things that they charge you for. So like, my family would support me with that, or, you know, if I ever needed, even now, like, I just have a supportive family, so whatever I need. Obviously, I'm not doing anything, so like, they're not looking at me like, why are we helping you? Like, I've actively been trying, but I have resources. I feel really for the people that don't have those resources. I don't know how, like, I could not have worked full-time, been doing those hours for free. Like, it's a lot. And other people have the capacity for that, and I commend them, but I would not have. Like, something, I would have messed up on something. Mm-hmm. I can't have my plate too full. I've always been that kind of person.
I got you. Nice. Mm-hmm. And so what's next for your journey? What's the next step for Liz?
So I'm in a scary place right now. I'm living in my be scared and do the thing anyway. I opened up my own practice last May. However, I was still working for a group practice, so I didn't really put a lot of energy towards it. I wanted to kind of give myself the opportunity to just kind of have it open and like see what it felt like. And I did a few podcasts, and I had like one client come through, like up until earlier this year. Mm-hmm. But I had decided like at the end of last year, like I want to go for it. So I gave myself the time frame of like by February, March, I'm going to tell my group practice employers like I want to leave them. So I did that last month, finally. Because I have like a friendship with my current employer. So it's not just like we're employer, employee. Like I really respect them, and like they've treated me really well. So it felt really hard to tell them that I wanted to leave. I didn't want to like disappoint them, I guess. And they reacted really kindly and really supportive. So I'm in the process of switching. I'm actually going to talk to them on Monday to see like what my last date will be with them, but I'm already getting credentialed with insurance companies on my own. Nice. And I'll stay virtual just to kind of save on that for now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm ready to not have a boss anymore.
Aren't we all?
It just feels really nice to kind of be like, oh, I don't have to ask anybody. Mm-hmm. I get to decide how I want to do things. Have to have more freedom. Like again, like I'll be, cause at the, with groups, a lot of the time what's normal is there's a percentage cut because they'll do the like admin stuff and they like get you clients. So like I also won't be giving up any percentage of my income. It'll just all come to me. So I'm excited. Like, again, I don't know like what's next. Like I've been networking on Instagram and I found, you know, a therapist and another lady that provides services to those with chronic illness, but she's not a therapist. She's somebody that has had to navigate like the medical system. Mm-hmm. So like, we're thinking about doing some collaborations. Like, I don't know, like I want to get certified in, it's called EMDR. It's a type of therapy that's used for trauma, but mm-hmm. there's like different certifications that we can get. So like, I want to do that. Being on my own allows me to earn more while working less.
That sounds good.
So like, I don't feel like I've had the capacity to do that because I've had to like see more clients, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've been working an average of like, sometimes I schedule 7 clients a day. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot. And yeah. are your clients coming over with you or like?
A big chunk are.
Good.
Yeah. Some of them want to, but I'm not taking on all of the insurance companies. Mm-hmm. So that's really like the only barrier for some is like, I'm not taking their insurance, but it's felt really nice to hear that they want to follow me. I'm like, oh, that it was another like, in like, they don't know that, but like, it's felt very validating that like, people are like, no, we want to follow you.
Nice. You talk about insurance, like is that difficult to get?
So if I had my preference, I wouldn't go through insurance. Mm-hmm. But at this point, like, I feel like I need to get my name out more. Mm-hmm. And you do that through like exposure. But fortunately for me, I was connected with somebody that does billing with insurance. So she, like, I pay her. And she does everything. So like, it's like a monthly fee that I'll be paying for her service.
Okay.
And that's going to free up my time to either do therapy or these other things that I'm trying to get into. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it might feel like a high expense, but it might, I'm like, I do not want to deal with that. No. Like I am all about outsourcing what I'm not good at. And I don't want to learn it. And I don't know. Like, I just know.
Nice. Well, you know, so usually around this point in my podcast, I ask my last couple questions for you. And so, you know, I think one of the big mm-hmm. ones is if you go back and talk to a younger version of yourself, what's some advice you'd give yourself?
I don't know if it's advice, but I would definitely hope that I could tell her that she is enough as she is mm-hmm. and that everything is going to be okay.
Nice. Yeah,
she did not feel that way at all. She was in it. Mm-hmm. So I would want to tell her those two things.
Good. Nice. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you believe that now. That's a big step.
It took me a long time.
Yeah, that's progress. So that's good. I'm really glad. And then ultimately, you know, how do you say success in Spanglish?
I don't know. Like, what does success mean to me? Is that what you
mm-hmm.
mean?
Yeah, what does success mean to you?
I mean, I think success to me, because a lot of people focus on, like, the income aspect, which obviously we need that to live. But to me, success is overcoming. Like, to have faced such low self-esteem and just so many things in life telling me no. When that's not what I wanted, right? Yeah. Or like being restricted, but like finding a way through it. really, to me, it's that idea of being scared and doing it anyway, because that's exactly how I've overcome. And just to share, I got that idea of being scared and doing it anyway from a woman called Brené Brown. She has a phrase called dare greatly. Mm-hmm. And that's what it means, to feel afraid, but not letting the fear stop you.
Nice. Yeah, I think. And
if I keep using that, like, again, good things keep happening. Like, it hasn't stopped. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy. But yeah, I think in a big way. And making a difference to me is success. Like, leaving people better than I found them.
Nice. Well, yeah, well, thank you for that. I mean, it's great advice, because it's true. I mean, I talk about my daughter, but one of the things I read early on is, if you let kids jump off of things and get hurt, they mm-hmm. gain confidence in taking risk, and that will eventually grow into becoming less afraid of taking risks, and you mm-hmm. end up becoming more successful.
Yeah, because they're feeding off of that energy. Yeah.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, being afraid is a natural mm-hmm. thing. Being able mm-hmm. to overcome that fear to move something on is what's going to help you, you know, succeed.
It's an emotion. It doesn't, like, so, like, I heard another saying that says, like, fear can exist, or an emotion can exist, but it doesn't mean redirection. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Yeah. Like, you can just keep going where you're trying to go, but you don't have to let the emotion stop you. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you reaching out to me and taking the time to get on the podcast. Tell me, how can people reach you? You know, what's your practice?
So my practice is called Resilient Lotus Psychotherapy. And I have an Instagram. You just look up that name. Or if you look me up on Google, like, I have two directories with Latinx and Psychology Today. So those should come up. But if you want to get, like, a good sense of who I am, then my Instagram is the place to go.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show with me. So
I appreciate you for what you do. This is a really great podcast idea. And I think, you know, again, like, we need to hear more success stories for people of color, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much. You enjoy your California weather. So
jealous much?
Yeah. I moved from Houston up to Connecticut, and I'm dealing with cold all the time. I'm not having fun. So.
All right.
Thank you so much. Bye. And for everyone else, you know, thanks again for jumping on and listening. And I hope you join me again next time as we continue to learn how to say success in Spanglish.